Good evening. This is TNT Radio, brought to you by Blog and Broadcasting Service, and I'm Nevin Campanella, your net reporter. How was your day today? Think about it. Did you have a good day? I had a very wet day. You would not believe how wet Paradise, California is. I'm getting ready to build the proverbial ark. This day in history, let's start right off the bat. From Wikipedia. 1775, on April 11th, I was trying to verify what I found in Wikipedia and could not verify it, but I'm going to read it to you. On April 11th in 1775 was the last execution for witchcraft in Germany. Can you believe that, folks? In 1775, they were still executing witches, but it was the last one. April 11th, 1876. This is a good one. The Benevolent and Protective Order of Elks is organized. I have absolutely no idea of what it is, why they are, or why they organize it, but I see the elk lodges all over, along with the moose lodge. Also on April 11th, in 1921... a sad day for radio. First sports broadcast. I am so tired of listening to sports broadcasts. But some people I know enjoy it. 1951, April 11th. This is a big one, folks. It was on April 11th that President Harry Truman relieved General Douglas MacArthur of overall command in Korea. You know, the whole situation with Truman and MacArthur was extremely political. There was some basis for it. Truman was really worried about MacArthur in terms of the possibility of the use of nuclear weapons. I think that's what Truman was really upset about. However, after several public criticisms of White House policy in Korea, which were seen as undercutting the commander-in-chief's position, Harry Truman removed MacArthur from command and ordered him to return to the United States. Truman put up with MacArthur's high profile for some time, however, and he may have, in fact, exchanged MacArthur for a sound nuclear policy in Korea, since he did not trust the brass hat MacArthur with nuclear weapons. He most certainly did not. And I'm convinced, anyway, knowing a little bit of the history, that that's what it was primarily about. Truman simply did not trust MacArthur and what he might do. It's not in my notes, but as I recall, MacArthur did once say, right after this occurred, he said something to the effect of, old soldiers never die, they just fade away. And he did. He literally faded away. For a while, he had presidential notions in his head, but there was too much controversy around him, and he never got the brass ring. April 11th, 1968, Lyndon B. Johnson signs the Civil Rights Act of 1968, prohibiting discrimination in the sale, rental, and financing of housing. The Civil Rights Act of 1968 prohibited 1. Refusal to sell or rent a dwelling to any person because of his race, color, religion, or national origin. Also, discrimination against a person in terms, conditions, or privilege of the sale or rental of a dwelling. Advertising the sale or rental of a dwelling indicating preference of discrimination based on race, color, religion, or national origin. Coercing, threatening, intimidating, or interfering with a person's enjoyment or exercise of housing rights based on discriminatory reasons or retaliating against a person or organization that aids or encourages the exercise or enjoyment of fair housing rights. Victims of discrimination may use both the 1968 Act and the... I'm not sure this is correct in the notes. It says the 1968 Act and the 1866 Act. That cannot be right. To seek redress. The 1968 Act provides for federal solutions. Well, I'll tell you the truth about the Civil Rights Act of 1968. It simply never would have passed if Martin Luther King had not been shot. There's no doubt about it, folks. The Civil Rights Act of 1968 was passed largely on the basis of the assassination of Martin Luther King. Was it needed? Most assuredly, as in fact, I have some personal experience going back to, I think it was 1962 or 63. I had a couple of friends of mine who were trying to find housing in Logan, Utah. They couldn't get it. They couldn't find an apartment. They couldn't rent an apartment. They couldn't rent a house. They couldn't rent a tent for the simple reason that one was black and one was white. They came to me and asked me to rent a place for them. In other words, I would go in, find a place, talk to the landlord, rent it, and then they would move in. And that's exactly the way what we did. It was the only way to handle the situation. On April 11th in 1979, one of the absolute most horrible, horrendous individuals was finally deposed as a dictator, and that was Idi Amin. Folks, when he was ruling in Uganda, it was a bloodbath. One huge bloodbath. This guy was really nuts. He really was. Amin's tenure witnessed such sectarian violence, including the persecution of the Akloi, Lango, and other tribes, as well as Christians in Uganda. Reports of the torture and murder of 300,000 to 500,000 Ugandans during Amin's presidency have been widespread since the 1970s. You know, the information I'm giving you came right out of Wikipedia, and I got to tell you, they're wrong. It was way more than 500,000, folks. I'm telling you, way, way more than that. This guy enjoyed blood. He was also kind of a weird nut. He was a fanatic about racing cars. He owned a bunch of them. And Disney cartoons. He watched Disney cartoons all the time. Very strange person. Many foreign journalists considered him a somewhat comical and eccentric figure. There was nothing comical about Idi Amin. The man, although he may have been a buffoon, was a murderer. There was also some rumors that he was a cannibal, but that had never been proven. And on April 11th, the birth of, in 1932, of Joel Grey, American singer, actor, and dancer. And folks, anyone who saw Cabaret had to come to realize that Joel Grey stole the show. I mean, he was absolutely amazing. And by the way, he did receive an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor. He was the master of ceremonies. And I'm telling you, folks, if you haven't seen Cabaret, rent it. Liza Minnelli does a wonderful job. She got Best Actress. And Bob Posey won Best Director. I did not know until reading some of this that Gray had also done some television appearances, and I was rather amazed. I haven't seen them. He apparently had been involved in some recurring roles on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and he also played the role of a demon in the final episode of the Dallas TV series. Anyway, that was a little bit of history for you, and again, on Joel Gray, He is, without a doubt, one of the best. And his role as master of ceremony in Cabaret was just outstanding. Okay, what do we got going on in national media? Well, if you've been reading any of the newspapers at all, you have to come to realize that over the past few days, there has been a massive, massive turnout for the immigration marches. There was so much done in the way of these marches that even the organizers were totally blown away. They would be expecting 20,000 and a million would show up. In Los Angeles, the turnout was 500,000 with another 1.2 million in Dallas. I mean, folks, there are a lot of people out there who do not like what Congress is doing with this whole immigration issue. You know, they turned it into a circus, and all it is political posturing. What about the immigrants? You know, I'm going to go down to the bottom of my notes. I want to read you something. It has to do with what the United States is about, or at least what it used to be about. And what I'm referring to is the Statue of Liberty. You know, if you look at the Statue of Liberty, the grace of the figure and what she represents, it certainly does not represent making illegal immigration a felony. I mean, this is absolutely absurd. Absolutely absurd. I'm trying to find my notes here. I've got something I wanted to read to you. Let's see if I can find it. And, here we go. First of all, on the Statue of Liberty. First, I want to read to you from a blog. I don't usually jump this quick to the blog, but let me read it to you. This is from the Agate Prop. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, conquering limbs astride from land to land. Here at our sea-washed sunset gate shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that Twin Cities frame. Now, the sign at the front door of the U.S. reads thusly, folks. Listen close. Quote, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. You remember, folks, when the United States really used to be like that? At one time it was. If you go to my notes after the show, you're also going to see a marvelous picture of the Statue of Liberty, which I found on the same website. Now, what I want to read is called Citizen of the Planet. And folks, this was written by Simon and Garfunkel. I may not read all the lyrics, but you'll get the idea. Who am I to believe that the future we perceive lies in danger and the dangers increase? Who are we to demand that the leaders of the land hear the voices of reason and peace? We are the citizens of the planet. We were born here. We're going to die here. Come what may, we are entitled by our birth to the treasures of the earth. No one must be denied these. No one must be denied. Easy dreams at the end of a chain-smoking day. Easy dreams at the end of the day. Who am I to deny what my eyes can clearly see and raise a child with a flame in his heart? Who are we to believe that these thoughts are so naive when we've all disagreed from the start? We are the citizens of the planet. We were born here. We're going to die here. Come what may, we are entitled by our birth to the treasures of the earth. No one must be denied. No one must be denied. Easy dreams at the end of a chain-smoking day. Easy dreams at the end of the day. Isn't that something? Well, folks, that's what the United States should be about. There are no borders. If you look at this beautiful blue ball from space, you don't see borders. We need to give everyone a chance. Everyone. Okay, out of the New York Times, what have we got? Oh, more of the same, but I do want to read it to you. It's a good one. It's, again, on immigration. Waving American flags and blue banners that read, "We are America," throngs of cheering, chanting immigrants and their supporters converged on the nation's capital and in scores of other cities on Monday, calling on Congress to offer legal status and citizenship to millions of illegal immigrants. The rallies, whose mood was largely festive rather than angry, were the latest in recent weeks in response to a bill passed in the House that would speed up deportations, tighten border security, and criminalize illegal immigrants. That's the part that gets me, folks. The criminalization of people seeking freedom. That's what we're talking about. I mean, does this make sense to you? You know, I understand a country trying to deal with its borders. I understand trying to get importation under control. But I do not understand the concept of making an illegal immigrant a felon. That is absurd. That's like saying, you are now a criminal because you sought freedom and a chance to survive. How bizarre. Back to it, folks. A proposal that would have given most illegal immigrants a chance to become citizens collapsed in the Senate last week. Over and over again, construction workers, cooks, gardeners, sale associates, and students who said they had never demonstrated before said they were rallying to send a message to the nation's lawmakers. Something needs to be done about our borders. Something needs to be done to get this under control. But the absurdity of criminalizing the illegal immigrant needs to stop. For after all, the Statue of Liberty is not holding an Uzi in her arms, shooting at people who are trying to enter the country. She's holding a torch. That's a torch of freedom, not a machine gun. This must change. From My Way News, some quickies here. A rocket kills 6 children in an Afghan school. And, of course, they're blaming it on the Taliban. But no one really knows. There was no evidence as to where it came from. But 6 children did die. Now, here's a strange one. And I'm not sure I understand why this happened. I'm not sure anybody does. However, apparently, the Prime Minister, John Howard, has had a number of death threats. Well, one particular police officer had been trying to track down where these death threats were coming from. Got nowhere. Got absolutely nowhere. So he consulted a psychic. Well, unfortunately, he put it in his notes and he got suspended. That's right. He was suspended because he consulted a psychic for leads in death threats made against Prime Minister John Howard. Kind of bizarre, huh? Apparently, they are also still finding bodies of storm victims in New Orleans. They're finding them in attics. They're finding them in basements. And, of course, by now, these are extremely mummified. And I got to say it over the air because it's the way it's presented, partially eaten by animals. There was no way anyone could have picked up everything immediately afterwards. I mean, this was one heck of a storm, and it's taking a long time to recover. Will New Orleans fully recover? You know, if they rebuild New Orleans back in that bowl and depend on levees, I think it's a mistake. I mean, what if you spend a few billions and billions of dollars to rebuild New Orleans only to suffer another hurricane? Doesn't make any sense. Why put it in the same spot when you know it can flood again? This is from The Agonist. Where you're now into the block. And this is the Nelson Report. I'll just quote right out of it. Every paper and magazine of national stature has pieces with increasingly anxious quotes from past and present U.S. officials, increasingly frank about their fears for the future. step back and think about what we are really hearing from the U.S. intelligence and military community. On one level, sure, there is a big Psy War operation being conducted by both Washington and Tehran, as each seeks to influence the sanctions debate at the United Nations, or whatever else comes. But if you look at the pattern of stories in recent weeks, examine the details of both anonymous and on-the-record quotes, you will see that there's another game underway, and our sources say it's called preempting Bush by laying out contingency plans, including the most bizarre, such as using tactical nuclear weapons on the Natanz reactor complex in Iran. The rising drumbeat of revelations, our sources argue, can have only one serious meaning. U.S. military leaders want to force a public debate, which makes it difficult for the president to talk himself into ordering a military solution to Iran's nuclear ambitions. Of course, we must stipulate that, strictly speaking, U.S. air power can take out the reactor and other critical sites known to Western intelligence, and so delay, perhaps indefinitely, Iran's nuclear weapons ambitions. Although the complexity that can best be appreciated by reading CSIS analyst Anthony Kordsman's latest paper, Iran's Nuclear Weapons, The Options If Diplomacy Fails. Folks, let me tell you, if diplomacy fails, it'll turn into a mess, especially if George Bush has his way. But that's not the point. As in Iraq invasion and victory over Saddam, what terrifies serious U.S. military intelligence and diplomatic players is how this administration can turn a tactical military victory into strategic catastrophe. Well, let me explain that to you. What they're saying is there's no need for a nuclear anything against Iran. We have the military capability of just simply taking out the reactor through normal military means. If he does something weird and strange, it would turn into a nightmare in the Middle East. Will Israel jump in and do something strange? They could. They could. Faced with this growing angst at home and around the world, our sources ask, based on how the Bush administration operates, what would it take to prevent catastrophe? Presuming an attack decision, the only chance would be international support. The U.S. has long ago forfeited ground troops and national treasure the administration has long ago spent. We don't have any troops left, folks. They're gone. They're all around the world. We are fighting on so many fronts. There is no one else. Obviously, there are hidden, sometimes contradictory, and always complex games being played when senior elements of the military and intelligence apparatus and their still powerful, deeply involved Illuminati associations find themselves talking to investigative reporter Hirsch of New York Magazine, or New York Times reporter Tom Shanker, who interviewed retired three-star Marine General and Iraq war planner Gregory Newbold on The General's Call in Time Magazine. Or the sources for British intelligence briefing delivered last Monday to Prime Minister Blair. Yeah, you know, talking about Blair off the side here, I don't know how long he's going to last. He doesn't have a whole lot of support at home. Almost none at all. He's in the same shape as Bush. From ACS. Title of this is Former Delaware Chief Prosecutor. Drug war is, quote, smoke and mirrors. Delaware Online is carrying an op-ed today. Former Delaware Chief Prosecutor Peter Letang. Letang cast a critical eye on the war on drugs, noting that despite the expenditure of billions of dollars to fight the battle, and despite skyrocketing incarceration rates for drug offenses, in other words, we're pouring a lot of money into it, we're putting a bunch of people in jail, and we haven't had any success with this so-called drug war. Drugs are more available today in larger quantities and from more disparate sources than ever before. And the sophistication of drug distributors has paralleled the increased expenditure of resources to stem the tide. What does that mean? We got to spend a lot more tax dollars. Letang goes on to argue that the return on our efforts and the financial commitments to this war have had minimal lasting impacts. If I am able to order up substantial quantities of drugs from a selection of dealers in Newcastle County on short notice, this war is being waged behind blue smoke and mirrors. The bottom line, he argues, is that the societal impact of what we have been attempting over the past many years has been frustrating, in large part, ineffective and expensive. Letang's sentiments echo those of some other former law enforcement officials, like ex-Seattle Police Department Chief Norm Stomper. Folks, let's talk about the war on drugs. This is about as pointless as you can get. First of all, where does it come from? Well, originally, you got to keep in mind that it was the, quote, moral majority that had a lot to do with a lot of things that are going on today that are ineffective. The war on drugs is silly. It's just plain dumb. All the money, all the manpower, and nothing has changed. So why do we continue to do it? Because there are some people who feel a moral obligation. Where does it say that I'm my brother's keeper? If someone wants to take drugs, and they are not bothering me, then what business is it of mine? Now, what happens if that person taking drugs gets into a car accident and kills someone? We have laws. We already have laws. You are not going to stop the use of drugs by making it illegal, no more than we could stop the use of alcohol during the early 1930s through Prohibition. It's not going to work. Where are we at? Well, let's get to from Best of the Blogs. This is an interesting piece. It's titled The New Improved Condoleezza. What's up with the image repackaging of Condi? First, we have the unseemly spectacle of her dragging reporters and photographers to her exercise sessions. You know what? I got a chance to see a picture of her. You know, you thought you were going to see a fashion model, I guess. Let me tell you, she does not look good in jogs. She really doesn't. And now comes a long, fawning story in the Sunday New York Times about her chamber music group, which seems to have been thrown together for the occasion. What's going on? Well, they're dressing her up, folks, for the show coming. What show is that? It's called elections. Election time is coming, and there are going to be a lot of names tossed into the arena. Hers is going to be one of them. And probably up against Hillary. That would be my guess. When it comes down to the election time, when the Democrats put up their people, Condi is going to be, the Republicans, when they put up their people, they probably will put up Condoleezza. And, of course, the Democrats will pull up Hillary. I guess they figure they're going to duke it out. I don't know. How low can it go? That's the next title. The latest Washington Post ABC News poll found that only 38% of the public approve of the job Bush is doing. That's down 3 percentage points since the past month. Now, let me tell you, that's pretty low. You know, how much lower can you get? I don't know, maybe rock bottom. You know, I don't think it would ever be a zero. There's always a few screwballs out there, like Rush Limbaugh or Bill O'Reilly or Ann Coulter. 60% disapprove of his performance. 60%! That is absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. Next one is titled, More Bush Legacy. You'd think endless warfare would be good for a military career, but you'd only think that if you were a commander-in-chief of exceptional mediocrity compounded by a paranoid Secretary of Defense who's loonier than a glue sniffer. Another legacy of the Bush administration, the destruction of the next generation of military officers. It was the second year in a row of worsening retention numbers, apparently marking the end of a burst of patriotic fervor during which junior officers chose continued military service at unusually high rates. Mirroring the problem among West Pointers, graduates of reserve officer training programs at universities are also increasingly leaving the service at the end of the four-year stint in uniform that follows their commissioning. For the life of me, I don't understand why the Democrats aren't emphasizing how shabbily the supposed party of the military treats the military. From poor strategy to worse tactics to the constant prioritizing of political concerns over military concerns to under-providing armor to sacrificing the military's blood on the president's fool missions. This administration has weakened the military while accusing the left of undermining the troops. The way for the left to be strong on national security is to loudly and with pride support our military. Start by screaming about its plight under the current commander-in-chief. Do you know that the armor that our soldiers are wearing is inadequate? That's right. And that the adequate armor, they won't let them wear, even if they buy it themselves? Amazing, huh? There is a distinction constantly and purposely blurred by the right between being anti-Iraq war and anti-military. One party, one president is responsible for the weakening of the military, and their only defense is to blame liberals for opposing that party and president. Now is the time for breaking away. Why not take a page out of GOP strategy and attack the GOP where they think they're strongest, relentlessly? Well, folks, I don't know how, for the life of me, the right wing can blame the Democrats for what's going on in the military. I mean, the Congress and the presidency have been ruled by the right wing going back to the end of the Bill Clinton administration. There is no one to blame but themselves. And they do treat the military shabbily. Some of the things that are going on in Iraq are, they're criminal. They're absolutely criminal. By the way, you know, when I mentioned that armor, did you know that the top brass does not fall under the same rule? On the lame excuse that they are testing, they can, in fact, wear armor that really works. But not the guys out on the front lines. Tell me, folks. Is that right? Something is very, very strange. This is from Anything They Say. And the title of it is London Calling. It is difficult to imagine how much one would have to talk on a telephone and to where the calls would have to be placed in order for one to ring up a $218 trillion phone bill in 2 months. But this is what Telkom Malaysia is now charging Yahya Wahb. I know I'd be curious. He's a Malaysian man. Said he nearly fainted when he received a $218 trillion phone bill and was ordered to pay up within 10 days or face prosecution. He said he disconnected his late father's phone line in January after he died and settled the, what's 84 ringgit, that's Malaysian money. It was a $23 bill. Telkom Malaysia says that these are the outstanding charges rung up on that line since January. Though there has been no statement as to where on earth or elsewhere any number of phone calls would result in such a charge. WAB seems to be taking this in good stride. Well, you know, folks, that would be too. I mean, if somebody says you have a $218 trillion phone bill, what else can you do but shrug your shoulders? Doesn't make any sense. If the company wants to seek legal action, as mentioned in the letter, I'm ready to face it, he said. In fact, I can't wait to face it. While expectedly this will put off as some sort of computer glitch, who wouldn't want to hear a Telkom defendant's bill in court? I'd love to be there. Of course, it's a computer. It's got to be. There's no question about it. Now, here's a blockbuster. Blockbuster news. I don't know how blockbuster this is. Comes from Democrats.com. Bush and Cheney discuss bomb prior to leak. Oh, big news. As if nobody knew this. This is a blockbuster. Possibly the most important Palmgate article yet because it ties Bush directly to Palm's outing. Please do everything you can to get it into the corporate media by calling talk shows and writing letters to the editor. Well, it's certainly not big news. I mean, anybody who doesn't know this has not been reading the news for the past few months. This had to occur. It's a given. In early June 2003, Vice President Dick Cheney met with President Bush and told him that CIA officer Valerie Palm Wilson was the wife of Iraq war critic Joseph Wilson, and that she was responsible for sending him on a fact-finding mission to Niger to check out reports about Iraq's attempt to purchase uranium from the African country. Now, that's according to current and former White House officials and attorneys close to the investigation to determine who revealed Palm Wilson's undercover status to the media. This next little piece is from the blog called The Modern World. I love this one. It's a little long, but I'm going to read it. And the reason is because it reflects my attitude also, right? I mean, it hits the nail on the head. First, I'm going to give you a word. It's called trepanation. Have you ever heard of that before? Trepanation? Well, it's the process of cutting a hole in the skull. Yeah. Now, according to John Varano, a professor of anthropology at Tulane University, trepanation is the oldest surgical practice and is still performed by some African tribes. Such skulls were found in France dating back to 5,000 B.C. Bart Hughes, a medical school graduate who has never practiced medicine except for a bit of self-surgery, believes that trepanation is the way to higher consciousness. He says that he wanted to be a psychiatrist but failed the obstetrics exam and so never went into practice. In 1965, after years of experimentation with LSD, cannabis, and other drugs, Dr. Hughes realized that the way to enlightenment was by boring a hole in his skull. He used an electric drill, a scalpel, and a hypodermic needle to administer local anesthetic. The operation took him 45 minutes. How does it feel to be enlightened? And from him, quote, I feel like I did when I was 14. Now, in the past, this surgery was used either to relieve pressure on the brain caused by disease or trauma, or to release evil spirits. The former is still an accepted medical procedure. The latter has died out. Well, maybe. I'm not so sure. Okay. Now, why did I go through all this? Well, I'm going to continue reading here from the author of this. Quote, I bring this up as a roundabout way of saying that I'd rather drill a hole in my head than write another damn post about the corruption of George W. Bush. But I'm a political blogger, and writing about this crap is my lot in life. So I'd better get used to writing the same post over and over until 2008. Well, apparently the author here thinks that we're going to have a change in 2008. I don't know, folks. I don't know. The voting public is pretty crazy. They were very willing to accept the election being stolen in 2000. Why is it going to be any different in 2008? I doubt it. Anyway, onward. I'll continue with the article. Quote, can there be any doubt that George Bush, as one of the most corrupt and dishonest political figures in our nation's history? He's a man whose arrogance and incompetence have led to a string of scandals that combine the worst aspects of Teapot Dome, the Pentagon Papers, Tammany Hall, the Whiskey Ring, Watergate, and more. Misleading the public about the Iraq War. Well, I would change that, folks. There's nothing. He did not mislead the public about the Iraq War. He just plain lied. And so did Powell. Quote, the use of torture as an interrogation tactic, spying on American citizens, looking the other way while war profiteers raid our treasury, diverting war funds without congressional approval, and blah, 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 on and on and on. You've seen variations of this list everywhere. Yet corruption has become so normal at this point that Bush's latest misdeed, selectively and secretly declassifying a national intelligence estimate to provide a single administration-friendly reporter. This is called leaking, folks. In other words, George Bush broke the law again. With the ever-growing mountain of evidence showing George Bush's serial betrayal of the public trust, is it any wonder that the president's best defenses are to parse the letter of the law in a way we used to call Clintonian and insist that everything's on a level because his lawyers said it's okay? And folks, that didn't work for Enron either. Or to shrug aside his law breaking as mere technicalities that are justifiable, because the president's only concern is to keep the American people safe. What a pile of crap. The only people who believe this crap are full-fledged members of the Bush personality cult, which, of course, folks, that would be Bill O'Reilly, Ann Coulter, and Limbaugh. Or does, because he's the kind of guy you want to grab a beer with? If my drinking buddy says it's okay, I believe him. Or as they say in Jonestown, have you tried the Kool-Aid? It's delicious. Yeah, apparently people who are involved with Bush, they follow him constantly, they believe this guy. Would they also have the drink at Jonestown? For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, a lot of people died on Kool-Aid. They all believe that... They all believe their leader, and he convinced them to commit suicide. I think it was like 900 people. Needless to say, this probably isn't going to get any better. The lack of oversight in Congress will leave as a big stain on the legislative branch, as Bush Jr. is leaving on the executive. Again and again, we sat there dumbfounded as the GOP, and for a brief period, the Democrats, Senate and House have, in the words of Fire Dog Lake, that's a blog, folks, rubber-stamped everything the president has asked for. Everything. At a certain point, you'd think a sense of professional pride would have kicked in among our 535 representatives in Washington that would compel them to defend, if not the interests of the American people, the interests of their own branch of government, enough to have them uphold their constitutional duty to act as a check on executive power. But I guess the quid pro quo that came with a veto-less presidency is enough to buy their silence with an endless supply of government handouts. That's right, folks. How does he do it? How does George Bush keep getting away with this? He pays them off. That's the pork barrel politics going on. You want a new federal highway? You better support Bush. That's the way it works in politics. As far as professional pride among 535 representatives in Washington, that's a bunch of bunk. They don't have pride. They never did. Folks, the obvious question is, what the hell do we do now? The obvious answer is, throw the bums out. I'm out of time. Good night and Godspeed.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.